Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Are you that person who has everything? The coolest merch and those must-have fan threads? Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
Podcasting to you from my study in my house in a field here in beautiful rural Ireland, I'm Trev Denny, and this is the Anfield Index podcast, on which I'm joined this week by the returning Carl Kopak and Cam Branch. Mr. Kopak, live from Norwich. Indeed. The sale of the century. How are you getting on, man?
It's the quiz of the week.
Quiz of the week. How's your Norfolk surrounds?
Norfolk Knights. Yeah. Norfolk Digital. I could just do loads of Partridge quotes if you want. Let me just put that in some sort of context for you. That's half the population of Hemsby. That's one of my favorite bands.
That does clarify everything.
I've been away, and if anyone wants to guess where I've been, they'll know it by the fourth word of my opening quote, which is this: "Order prevails in Berlin, you foolish lackeys. Your order is built on sand. Tomorrow the revolution will rise up again, clashing its weapons, and to your horror, it will proclaim with trumpets blazing, 'I was, I am, I shall be.'"
Okay, so there are a couple of ways we can take this. Obviously, first of all, we should acknowledge that we'll need to get back to the content of that quote and its origin. But also, we should note that you have obviously dropped a big clanging pot there saying, "I've been away in Berlin, lads." So would you like to give us a potted history of your trip, the best bits?
Well, I'll talk about where that quote's from. So basically, we were walking around Alexanderplatz. We were trying to find somewhere nice to eat. That didn't involve – well, basically, that involved veg, which is tricky around Alexanderplatz because that's very sort of
– sausagey.
It's Oxford Street-y, really.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Although I like the place a lot. So we went and found a falafel sort of Greek salad type bar type place, which is very nice, and it's beautiful actually. And while we were sat there, we realized that we were on Rosa Luxemburg Strasse. So we thought, well, who Rosa Luxemburg was? So we looked at Rosa Luxemburg on Wikipedia, and we were going to go down to the East Side Gallery anyway to look at the Berlin Wall art, the biggest stretch of the wall that still exists. And we ended up walking right the way across. I mean, it's literally right across the entire city to see the Rosa Luxemburg Monument, which is her name tilted into the river because that's where she was killed and that's where she was thrown over the by the Freikorps in Germany in the 1921, something like that, maybe 1919. Not entirely sure. And Rosa Luxemburg was a revolutionary woman who basically was born in Poland, and she really had like a childhood illness, really, really small, walked with a limp. And to say that she stood up, for the workers' rights and did things like this, as a human being in those days with everything so repressed because Russia was involved in Poland. But to do it as a woman as well, it was well worth walking across the city and thinking about her. And I quite like that quote.
That also sounds particularly dramatic as a memorial, I have to say.
I'll put a photo up on Instagram.
Do, please.
Absolutely amazing. In fact, I'll put it here as in our little chat now that no one can see. That really made an impression on me. That's just like the whole story. And it's not just because she's a revolutionary, because one of her mates has also got a road named after him. But I think it's just because she was a woman as well and so small and Jewish. So, you know, I mean, in those days, lowest of the low, sadly. That's how people were judged back then in that era and that part of Europe. And this is before the Second World War. Obviously, I think they kept, I mean, I could be completely wrong, someone bear then will tell me, that they kept, I think the road may have been named because it was in the East Berlin section. So, of course, the Russians loved her, the communists loved her. And I just like the fact that when the wall came down and, you know, everything's been completely redone in Berlin, that they've kept the name because it's such an extraordinary woman. And, you know, she died in that city.
Can I ask you, there are a few of those sort of monuments that you go to around the world, and they have that kind of hushing quality that it brings upon you. You know, I know when I visited Ground Zero, for example, and that incredible sort of those sort of pits and the waterfall effect there, that had a real sort of profound quieting effect on me. And then for a completely different reasons, just because the sheer artistry of it, I had a very similar quiet sort of awestruck feeling when I went to see the Familia Sagrada Barcelona. It's one of the most amazing buildings. I think the most amazing building I've ever seen. You know what I mean? But that kind of, you just have to, you're just kind of awestruck. It sounds to me like that probably had a similar effect on you.
This is where my Ripper stuff comes in as well. It's for me, it's the fact that, and I'll tell a story about this in a minute. It's the fact that something incredible happened there. Now it's nothing. So for example, I think it was our first day where we were there. So my girlfriend was there. Well, the wall was up pretty much last time, and we walked back a bit drunk, and we'd been round sort of Brandenburg Gate and things like that, and we were just walking down the road and said, "Do you think this road is quite an important road?" She goes, "No, it's a road. There's nothing here. What are you talking about?" I said, "This is the most important road in the history of the 20th century. That where you're standing now is where Hitler shot himself, and there's nothing there to say this is where Hitler shot himself. There's a little sign saying this is where the Führer bunker was." And we went back there a few days later in daylight, and I said, "By the way, that's where that was." And again, she said, "I didn't see it. Doesn't mean anything." Which is the right way to look at it. It's Berlin as a city, I think, more than anything else. It's here. This is where it is, and there's a museum nearby. But that's all you're getting. That's what. Rose Luxemburg gets a street, and it's a long. It's a big street as well. It's a big one. It goes up to Friedrichstrasse, and she's got that monument I've just sent in the group chat now, and that's. That's how I think we should handle history.
Of course, the main reason that Hitler isn't memorialized for killing himself there is because he's still alive in Argentina. That's God, just...
I've forgotten about this. Cam, have I been away 2 weeks, mate, and I've totally forgotten about this.
It's the Bormann rat line. I don't know how you don't know about these things. Cam Brain...
I'm talking about Martin Bormann as well, by the way, because that's extraordinary what happened to him.
Listen, we could and will do an entire series on Martin Bormann, and I would put the hair standing on our listeners' head. What an interesting character. Let's just put that. Oh yeah, he's dead. I think Hitler might be at this stage as well.
But bearing in mind, he'd be 130 something at the moment.
Cam,
Trevor.
Good evening, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Trevor. Good evening to you. Good evening, Carl.
Hello there.
Have you back, Carl.
Pleasure.
Have you been putting it about in other podcasts?
No, I haven't actually.
No, you haven't. Okay. I thought you were.
I'm not turning into the podcast hall like you are.
No, well, I'm
taking five drinks, mental.
I prefer to think of myself as something other than a. How dare you? How very dare you? I prefer to think of myself as a regular. that's one of the euphemisms they use, isn't it, in that game?
That's one word for it.
Yeah, he's my regular. He's my regular. I'm just people's regular. So how are you getting on, and what have you got for us?
Yeah, just before I give you my quote for the day, just mentioning awe-inspiring buildings. When I was 11 years old, we were in India and my dad took us to the Taj Mahal.
Wow, okay.
And just the beauty of it, the magnificence is unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I mean, I've never been again since, and I should really take the kids and give them the opportunity to see it as well. And well, we've got to sort out Matt Snowden first before we can worry about and consider the Taj Mahal. Let's just baby steps, Carl. Baby steps, yeah.
Well, you're taken off though. That's the main. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, that was the. It was the phrasing of a cam. I hope you understand.
Can you drive there, Cam?
I could. I'm just concerned about the route.
Iraq, wouldn't we? Which might be a bit of
This Iraq could be an issue.
So, I fail to see the problem here. I fail to see the problem. Just let's get it.
We've got to do Iran as well.
Let's just get it.
To do Afghanistan as well.
It's all good. It's all good. We'll get a Humvee. That'll blend right in.
Well enough. Done right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
We can champers in the back of Campbell. <Yeah. laughs> What hope?
We might have to drag an oil tanker with us as well if we're taking a Humvee. Yeah.
Anyway, you're the Taj Mahal. Yeah, God, that's got to be on everyone's bucket list. I would have thought. I'd certainly see in real life. What quote have you got for us to start off with?
Okay, I used to stand on the cop when I was here in 1969. The atmosphere and passion on the pitch as well as the terraces was intoxicating, and Liverpool became part of me from that day on.
Jed. Am I right?
Who would have been 74 today.
That's right. Bless him. Is right. Bless him. I have to say, an underrated era of joy in my Liverpool history was that Jed era where we were winning all those pots. It was beautiful, I have to say. Really enjoyed that. Cam, I thought we'd start off by you and Carl were both at the Chelsea game, and rather than any sort of analysis of a game which is long since dead and talked to death, I wouldn't mind just getting a different take, because obviously the match day experience is back. It's a very special, very wonderful thing. And I followed my friends, yourself and Carl and Harinder and people like that. I followed your journeys and your photographs and being back in the ground and sort of vicariously experienced a feeling I know only too well of being around and the match day buzz and getting into the ground and all the rest of it. Now, I've never, ever had an issue with that whole process. In fact, I'm also very aware that several times I've sort of pitched up pretty much last minute. And of course, it's pretty much smooth sailing because most people, myself included, like to be in the ground that bit early for the songs and the atmosphere build up and all the rest of it. But you could always just arrive. That doesn't seem to be the case at the moment. Talk to us a little bit about your entry to said match.
Okay, so obviously we had the whole journey up where we got to Arinda Bhaji and a friend of his, Jagger. They picked me up about 11 o'clock. We left about 11:30. We got into Liverpool about just before 2 o'clock. We went down to the Albert Docks. We had a bite to eat at one of the restaurants. And then we made our way to the ground about 3:30-ish. And it was at that point Arinda Bhaji goes to me, "Oh, let's just have a look at your ticket on the NFC app and all that." So I opened it up and there was my membership card there with no seat details on. Wow. And then you scroll across and there was a barcode. And what it was, the ticket had been transferred over by Gags's cousin, because it was originally in Gags's cousin's name, but he couldn't make it. So me and Gags were originally going. Then Gags couldn't make it, so he transferred his ticket over to somebody else. So this is the actual last game you can actually transfer tickets to as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so beware of that, folks. So I'd sent Gag screenshots and I said, "Look, I've got no seat numbers on here." So he sent me the seat numbers and I said, "I've just got this barcode," which it won't let me screenshot, so I had to take a photo of it, and I sent it. And I assumed the barcode then was my entry, because a barcode had been mentioned. Nice. So when her, yeah, exactly. So when Herinder looked at it, he goes, that doesn't look right. So, and we phoned Gags up and he said, look, you need to send the email. And he goes, and Gags goes, Cam, haven't you had the email? I said, what email? I've had no email come through to me. He goes, let me send it again. So I got the email through. I then had to download a PDF. Then I had to go back and because I've got two-factor authentication on my phone for Gmail, it wouldn't send me the second notification. So I could authenticate that this phone was what was going to be taking the ticket. It just wouldn't let me, wouldn't send it, wouldn't. And then eventually it just said, too many goes. We can't do anything. So I then had to go and stand in the ticket queue, which was about 30 minutes in the ticket queue. Finally got to the front of the ticket queue. So this is about now, I got to the front of the ticket queue about, ooh, what time are we looking at? Okay, kickoff's 5:30. So it's just before 4:45. So about 4:40. The lad looked at my phone, wanted the details of who transferred the ticket over to me. I had to phone Gags up, make sure I got the correct name. He found it on our friends and family. Yeah, printed off a ticket for me. So I have an Android phone. Apparently this is an issue with Android phones. It works reasonably well on an iPhone. So then looking for, right, entrance S. Entrance S, if anybody knows Anfield, so the ticket office is underneath the cop. Entrance S is the Anfield Road end, which is the other side of the stadium. It's literally right next door to where the away fans go in. So it's right on the corner there. So where was the queue for entrance S? Walton Breck Road, which is where the cop, which is past the cop, past the shop, other side of the stadium. So it's now 4:45. I'm in a queue, which is to the other side of the stadium. And there was people still queuing up behind me. I was in that queue for 45 minutes. One of the gents told us, who was in front of us, said, if you've got an FC ticket, do not open your app yet. Wait till you get to within four or five or three people in front of you at the gate, at the turnstile, before you open your app, because that's when the app then picks up, the stadium NFC picks up your app and it authorizes your ticket. So when you put your phone into the NFC scanner, which is a QR code, it will let you in straight away. What's happening is obviously everybody's opening up their app when they're in the queue, standing there for 45 minutes, and it's freezing the app. So when they're then getting to the turnstile, it's frozen, they're having to refresh, blah, blah, blah. So what the knock-on effect is, whereas before we used to have a card or a ticket, and you just put it into the reader, and you'd be in within 10 seconds. Because everybody's now getting to the turnstile and they're having to refresh and start all over, it's taking 30, 40 seconds. Imagine the knock-on effect.
Yeah.
When 1,000 people or 100 people or 200 or 300, whatever number of people are waiting in that queue, are all doing the same thing. Why is the club not letting people know this? When when they get that ticket come through onto their app, why isn't there a notification on there saying that? Do not open the app until you get to within three or four people in front of you and then open your app.
Well, probably because they're only working it out as they go along. It just sounds like a complete palaver.
And it is a palaver. I mean, yeah. I got in at 5:28.
I was just going to say, you were 45 minutes in the queue. You said you started at 1:45. So you just about made kick.
I was in the upper stand of the main stand. Now, if anybody knows the upper stand, that's a lot of stairs.
That's a lot of climbing, yeah.
And I ran up those stairs. I didn't want to stand behind people in the escalator. I ran up the stairs. I got into my seat just as the fans finished singing "You'll Never Walk Alone."
Oh, for God's sake, that's just ridiculous.
Don't forget, there were people behind me who were older than me who would have missed the start of the game. They may, some people would have missed 5 minutes, some people would have missed 10 minutes. Now, the game cannot be delayed because of TV. The club will get fined. There's the stewards are just standing around. Yes, they're helpful, but again, why aren't the stewards walking up and down that line telling people, do not open the app? This is where the it's simple. There was an announcement made just as I was going in, please do not open the app.
And that's obviously the
that's 5:30 near enough.
That's what I'm saying. That's the first one that you heard, right? Pointless, in other words.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, they've trialed it with the Atletico Bilbao game. They knew there was a problem. They had problems at the Burnley game. They've had problems at the Chelsea game. Honestly, I mean, my experience was still not so bad. Yeah, I'd still like to think I'm reasonably young enough and fit enough to stand in the hot. You know, it was quite hot that day. I was in shorts and t-shirt, and you know, luckily it wasn't bakingly hot. But imagine it's freezing cold. Imagine it's chucking it down with rain.
Yeah, no, that's daft.
It is honestly, you know, the communication from the club on this is extremely poor. And it's the club, people. It's not FSG. All right. This NFC is at every ground in the country now. It's Premier League rules, from what my understanding is. So before the FSG outers get on your high horse, do one. So
more of those lads later. More of those lads.
Do
later.
One. Yeah, that'll That's going to calm the flames there, Cam. Well done. Do one.
I'm very diplomatic.
I can see that.
You know, I mean,
you're continuing the long branch tradition of venting on this show at our lovely listeners as if they are horrible people, because you just want to talk to those horrible people.
Oh, I'm sure there's a one or two who.
Are you saying there might be a horrible person listening to this? What is wrong with you? How dare you?
No, I better not say anything.
How dare you?
I don't want to stir the pot too much. I think Carl did that nicely.
Yeah, no, he's long gone, our pal. Yeah.
He might still listen, you never know. Hello, by the way.
I had a bit of a rant about on Twitter yesterday about the whole FSG. I write for various websites.
Let's go there, Carl. Come on, because at the end of the day, that's the ticket experience. Let's talk about now. You know, everybody's ranting and raving about FSG.
Yeah, before we do, by contrast, Carl, I could see, like I say, following no envy at all, vicariously following all your experiences. You were in the ground nice and early. What was your experience of going in?
No problem at all.
Okay, and why was that? Was that because you were going in at a time when it was particularly quiet?
This is a problem, but it's nowhere near as. I don't want to make light of Cam's plight there, because that is ridiculous. I've got on very early. My brother-in-law likes to go in very early, and I had the same thing with Burnley. Obviously, I got on very early then. The problem I had with the ground, and this does sound flippant, but it was very, very. Very, very important thing for me is the only lager you can drink in Anfield is Carlsberg. And I got in 2 hours early before kickoff. And there's nothing to do. The tellies don't. I thought the tellies might have at least put the scores off what was going on in 3 o'clock games. It doesn't do that. Yeah. And we had to sit there with Carlsberg. Now, I completely accept that Cam's, you know, thinking, am I going to get in on time? But I think my plight is just as bad.
Well,
Carlsberg.
I feel far sorrier now that I've heard that. I think that we now know where the real human tragedy lies, because I can relate. I go early to everything. I'm early for everything. I've never been late for anything in my life, except once by accident to Anfield. Every other time I've been in the ground, so I just love soaking it up. But that is a downside.
I downloaded a map from Norwich to Leeds today for the next game, and I don't even have a ticket yet. That's how cautious I am before match day.
There you go.
You know what else annoyed me about this?
Oh, here we go. He's on a roll here now.
No, all it was, because of the time issue, like I said, we got there at 3:30, give or take. I wanted to go in the shop. I wanted to have a look at the new kits. I wanted to spend some money, perhaps. The club's lost out.
They've lost out there.
They made up for it in Carlsberg sales.
Well, if they could, yeah, whatever. Carlsberg. Fuck my life.
Carlsberg. Have you noticed, Dan, by the way, that that Trev completely refused to slag off Carlsberg because of the nationality of his mate?
Listen, my mate.
If you said Carlsberg Mads special brew, he would have been all over.
My mate Mads Mikkelsen is a good lad, and I'll not have you sully his name. I presume that's who you're talking about, my mate Mads, yeah?
I'm talking about my mate, your mate who I saw in the ground on Saturday before kickoff with the impeccable hair. Who played number 10 for Liverpool.
Good. Branch, that's a shitty thing to say.
What, your beard is amazing.
I'm sad you've hurt me because everybody knows I'm famously insecure about being a baldy.
Yeah, right.
Everybody knows how fragile I am about that and how many pictures of myself are all over the internet because I'm so afraid of my my own image. Oh my God.
Guys, that's why you always wear a hat. I keep forgetting. Sorry. I take it back, Ravinder. I apologize. You know what? You know what I'll do then, yeah? What we'll do, yeah? When I come over to Ireland, I'll teach you how to do a turban. I'll bring a turban with me. And we'll get you in a proper turban. How's that?
Cam, I want to introduce you to 2021 and the term cultural appropriation.
Anybody can wear a turban. It protects you from the heat, Trev.
Fuck me, no? Man. What are you trying to do? Set me up for an attack of the woke? Come on now. Let's move it.
You love every second of it.
Let's move it swiftly along. Carl, you were going to talk about FSG, and it may lead us into any transfer grumbles that you want to bring out as well. But what's the gist of where you wanted to go with this FSG?
I don't know if this affects any Anfield Index writers. I'm not sure, but I've read a lot of shit about. So I write. I'm not going to mention names because it's pretty obvious I'm talking about. But I write for several LFC websites, or have done. One, I'm a columnist at one. Obviously, I'm a weekly podcaster on this one. I do podcast for the other one as well every now and then. But I've written for like Red Men. I've done stuff for Empire of the Cop and things like that every now and then. And nothing has annoyed me more in the last week or so of being told that those channels, I don't know if Anfield Index is part of this as well, are not criticizing FSG because of the access they have. And they don't want to piss off people in the club. And I know someone at the club. But to be told that you'll never criticize them, you'll never do shows about them, you'll never say we know what they are, you won't do any of the rubbish about FSG out, that sort of thing, because we have full access to the players and we don't want to spoil things ever. Can I just tell the world just how much of that is absolute bollocks? It really is. I've no wish.
Well, all of it is bollocks, because if all you have to do is cock your ear to Anfield Index podcasts and you'll hear people fucking foaming at the mouth.
It's the same so, with every channel. It's the same with every
sure
channel.
I'm sure there are plenty of people doing it on all the other ones too. Interestingly, I think, Carl, some of the people who are mouthing those particular insults are actually ironically affiliated with one or two little groups who may or may not also throw a podcast around, who just do the whole everything's wonderful and do their digs on the sly. So there's a whole web of bullshit here, and it's probably best not to untangle it because we'll just get too specific and then you're as bad as them.
About what it is, because I have had access before when.
Of course,
You get access to the press room and press badges if you work for an organisation that covers more than one football club.
Yep.
So all the channels that we know, and they only look after one football club. They do not get access. We get access on things like foreign tours, and that's only because of the country involved or anything like that. Or they get invited to the training ground to interview somebody or something like that. At no point, I've had one piece rejected in the last 10 years by one of the channels I've written for. And that's because someone else wrote an identical piece and they did it better than I did. And if I tell you afterwards who that was by, you're going to go, yeah, that's fair enough. He's a good writer. So to be told, these people won't speak out and what have you, it's absolute bollocks. And also, it also suggests that there's a corporate editorial line on everyone. So, I mean, I used to write for Anfield Index, and no one's ever said to me, actually, it did happen once, but it was only in a jokey way. No one said, no, don't write about that because I disagree with it. Or, you know, no, no, we don't want to do that. Or we don't want to, you know, upset the apple cart. I've slated FSG to tears, mostly over in 2012 over Kenny. And they were despicable about the European Super League. Absolutely ridiculous. I don't like the owners. But because I'm not going to go in a cry-ass march where I don't know anyone, it doesn't mean, like, you know, I'm in. But it just amuses me when I go. I've had loads of tweets saying, like, you know, oh, that's because you're in the payment of the club. Can someone give me some of the money which I'm supposed to receive from that? Because I've had fuck all.
Well, Carl, the only two times I've had press accreditation was as on behalf of two different organisations going to cover a Liverpool game in actually a pre-season both times. Are you telling me and telling the rest of us that fan media don't get access to the press room? Is that correct to say in the Jurgen press conference, there will not be, like, let's say, somebody from Red Men or somebody from Tor or somebody from Anfield Index? You'll never have that. Is that what you're saying?
I've been to one press conference at Anfield, and that was because I had a meeting with Jamie Carragher afterwards. But that was about something else. But no, you're not allowed in. No, it's national newspapers. Then they might invite someone in every now and then, but that's incredibly rare that happens. I've done press conferences for lower league clubs, and it's the national newspapers and it's the tabloids. And it's broken down between people who do match reports and people who do the what's called the taste piece on Monday. So, for example, at the Times, someone else, say it's a 3 o'clock kickoff, someone would go into the press conference and write about exactly what's just happened in front of them there and then. And then after that press conference, a manager takes you into a little side room and it's the Monday papers. And that's more of a, what does that result mean? Which is what I did. But there's no,
I'd like it.
There's no way, you know, Anfield is boss 347 or something are in there. And no one is. It's not about access. They're not allowed. We're not allowed access as fans.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, what happens is, though, Carl, I mean, by the way, I'm deliberately ignoring the fucking massive pot lid clang that you just threw in there about your meeting with Jamie Carragher. That's I refuse. Oh, fuck me.
It was with Rafa as well.
Oh my God. I completely refuse to acknowledge that. But people will see, for example, someone like doing shows like with like, just say on one level, say the shows I do with Jan or Jason McAteer or Mark Lawrenson or whoever it happens to be, the X-Reds. And then people will see other stuff where maybe you see a fan channel who gets an interview with the likes, say, of the aforementioned Jamie Carragher. That's kind of closer again. And then you'll see the likes of the fan channels who, either because they're based locally or they go around, like, I know Redmen, I think Tor have had access to an interview, maybe an interview here with Jurgen or there with a player on the current squad or Robbo or someone like that, right? Or Trent or something like that. So people see that, you see, and they think that's what they mean, I think, by the access. Well, if you don't have that, the access is one thing, right? But this whole idea of, like, being in the payoff, or, like, you know, being afraid to say what you think because, I mean, it is bananas. I don't know. I love a conspiracy theory, but frankly, that's ludicrous. Like, you know,
we don't want access. I don't want it. I'm in my late 40s, Trev, and I'm long past the days where I can sit down. I'd love a chat with Andy Robbo, but what the hell am I going to talk to Virgil about, for God's sake?
Well, can I tell you a big secret here? I don't want access either, because in order to do what I'm supposed to do, which is comment on a match afterwards and be dispassionate and observant and critical as best I can, obviously always you're going to be a fan first, but you're supposed, that's part of what I'm supposed to do. And I'm supposed to host people. I'm supposed to ask questions to poke around the edges and try not to be too one-eyed about it. I don't want to be. I've no desire, again, like you, I'm a man in my late 30s, and I've no desire to be talking to footballers or what. I'll be honest with you, right? we all know famously this channel has an affiliation with Kenny. I'm still like at this stage, Eddie Gibbs will tell you, I could have done about 7 or 8 interviews with Kenny, and I keep going, no, it's okay. Like, I'm genuinely, I don't talk to my hero. I just don't. So there are several reasons why you wouldn't want to do that. But the dispassionate thing is one of them, if you're going to do your job properly. So I don't get it. If you have a chance to make a bit of content for your channel with someone who's contemporary at the club, you're going to do it. That doesn't mean you're suddenly beholden to them. That's just that.
They're not going to ring you up afterwards and complain. It doesn't work like that.
Primarily because they'll forget who you are afterwards.
Literally, the second you shake their hands and they turn around back to their car.
Yeah. That was, you're just some lad. That's just how it works. It's a weird one. I mean, look, the elephant in the room of the last week has been the transfer window. Some people have chosen to really point at that elephant and shout and scream and scare the elephant. Other people have sat quietly and fumed in the corner and not woken said elephant. I mean, Cam, just to swing the conversation back to you on this topic, and we can, by the way, lads, we can be as brief or as detailed as you like about this. I'm kind of done it because I've done 4 shows on this already. Yeah. So I've nothing more to say, but I do just want to throw it out there and just get a general feel for where you're at with it. I mean, we all saw the stupid shit going on Twitter. Whether you choose to engage in it or not is up to you. I made the mistake of making a slightly blunt comment, Cam, on the evening of the thing closing. Yeah, which is, it's atypical for me. It was just like,
very rare.
I try to be a nice, happy-go-lucky fella. I'm not confrontational like you and Kopak. I'm not, you know, I'm a nice lad. I'm famously nice lad. But I was annoyed. I was annoyed because I wanted us to get a couple of shiny new players. And I still have massive faith in this squad. I still think we can win the league. I've said that a million times. Sometimes you get tired saying that and you just want to say, I'm pissed off. I wish we'd gotten footballers. And all you people who are saying that it'll all be grand, I think later on you may regret that, or you may be proven to be wrong. Just that was the gist of it. Yeah. Wow, what a mistake that was, Cam. What a mistake that was, because all the weirdos come out of the woodwork. I had weirdo after weirdo piping up. So, I mean, where did you find the need to articulate your annoyance, or were you annoyed? Maybe you were perfectly calm. How did you react to the whole thing?
I'm being calm about it. I mean, I had a little mini rant last week, didn't I? Where I said, look, we don't understand what's going on behind the scene. And I was listening to the old school pod with Dave, Eddie and Gag this week, and they mentioned, I think they said the name was of the lad was David Davis, who'd made a comment, 3 points or 2 points. And it was, one, we don't know if FSG are refusing to sanction any transfers.
The hell's going on with this government?
This is it. I could be wrong with the name, but I'm sure I heard the name Davis anyway. So
it was Dave Davis. Yeah, it was
Dave Davis. There you go. Sorry. Yeah. So he came out with a couple of points where he goes, one, we don't know if it's FSG who are refusing to sanction the transfers,
and that's my issue.
Yeah. Two, we don't know if it's Jurgen Klopp not accepting those transfers, or three, we don't know if they're not working with each other anymore. We honestly don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We haven't got a clue. If you're worried about finances and you want to know about the finances, log on to Companies House and go through the accounts with a fine-tooth comb and see where the money is. Work it out for yourself, people. Yes, they're going to talk about the Redbird investment and how it was supposed to help us through the COVID pandemic and everything. That's fine. That's a valid argument to have. Yeah, I am like you. I wanted a midfielder. I would have loved to have had another forward come in because of the African Cup of Nations. It hasn't happened for whatever reason. It just hasn't happened. Do we want FSG to then use their own money to go? Do we want a sugar daddy now running the club? Is that what we want? Do we want a Chelsea-type owner? Do we want a state running us? They're saying FSG need to get out and somebody else needs to come in. Who? Tell me who. Do you want the Chinese government running us? I fucking don't.
I guarantee you, Cam, an awful lot of the people who are doing
they
that,
don't
you
know,
they're not thinking it through. It's a careful what you wish for kind of thing, because we as a fan base are an unusual lot. And I guarantee you half of those people who are crying and shouting about FSG out probably have like socialist flags in their bios and stuff like that. And, you know, they would preach all the Liverpool values and stuff. But how do you square the circle then?
Well,
if your only alternative is to invite in petro state money,
I mean, the thing is that the argument they'll come back is there's plenty of billionaires out there, and that's the point. It's going to take 2-3 billion to buy the club. Then you're going to need $500 million to fund transfers and this, that, and the other. And then you're going to we're Liverpool. We're the ones who are going to get fucked over by FIFA, UEFA, the Premier League for FFP. They'll go after us because we're Liverpool. Yeah. Maybe I'm talking with my rose tinted Liverpool spectacles on here. You know, always the victim sort of, you know, how people sing at us or whatever. And, you know, that bollocks. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it always feels like there's an agenda against Liverpool. And if we went ahead and started not playing by the rules as they are now, we will be fucking stitched up like a fucking kipper by the authorities. And here's a perfect example of why I say that. Last season, a game was abandoned because fans invaded the stadium and a game was postponed. There was outcry for a few days. What's happened about that? Anything? Any sanctions? It will happen at some point. But why have they been so quiet about that? Why haven't we heard anything about that? Because it's not Liverpool. It's fucking Man United. Yeah.
All that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Expand the hypocrisy a little as well, because an awful lot of the people who may or may not have been part of that, but were certainly cheering it on, are now doing little jumpy up and down dances because they've got the dodgy boy in from Juventus.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the Glazers' money is okay.
Of course it is, because, and if you look over the last 5 years, United have spent more than any other team in the country. Yeah, they're the biggest net spenders out there. Now, how have they spent this transfer window? They've used loans. They've piled more debt on the club. FSG don't do that. They run the things properly. I want fucking signings as much as the next man, as much as the next woman, as much as the next person. Yeah? We want signings. We want that squad strengthened. My concern is there's a gap now. There's a gap between what's coming through the age group. It's late teens, early 20s, and then it's going to the players at their peak, 28, 29, 30. Where are the 23, the 24, the 25, the 26-year-old? All I see is Jota in that little group. Yeah, Naby's going to be 27. Yeah, you can't rely on him. That's one player, Jota. This is where FSG and Edwards and Klopp have failed. Yeah? Did you hear that, people? They have failed. Yeah? There isn't a group of players in that age bracket who are the stepping stone to replace the players who are at their peak today. It's a big, big ask to ask the younger players of your late teens and your early 20s to suddenly come in 2-3 years at 23, 24, 25, and to be the ones competing to win the league, to win the European Cup. That is a big ask. You need experienced heads in there. I have an issue with giving Nat Phillips a new contract. I think that's bad planning. Yeah, he's our fifth choice centre-back. We didn't need to give him a new contract. You could have given him a new contract with 6 months left on his contract. He would have signed it. He ain't going to get a bigger club than Liverpool. I have an issue with giving Jordan Henderson a new contract. That's a player who is slowly, slowly on the downward. He's not going to get any better than what he is or has been previously. To give him a four-year contract, I think was a big... I don't agree with it. I think you could have left it for another year. There's no bigger club he's going to. Atletico Madrid aren't bigger than us, and they weren't coming in for him. PSG definitely weren't going to come in for him. Even if he was on a free, they wouldn't take him. No disrespect to Jordan Henderson. This is the biggest club he will ever, ever play for. I mean, he's never going to move now because he signed a new contract. But I had an issue with that. And I think this summer, the whole structure has got it wrong. For one reason or another, we don't know those reasons as fans. Should we know those reasons? To a point, yes, definitely. But at the end of the day, we have, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, we have to trust the process that 3 years ago won us the European Cup, 2 years ago won us the league. We have to trust that process.
You see, now there's where I come across, and I'm going to interject and bring Carl in here, because I have this feeling around the whole trust the process, trust the plan thing, that sort of famous QAnon refrain. And I think, yes, absolutely. And I was the one preaching that for the longest time. But I feel there, and this isn't just like airy fairy shit. There's something a bit different going on, and we know there's something different going on because we know Michael Edwards is on the way out. And so all of a sudden, trusting the process, and this isn't to pick up on what you're saying. I agree with so much.
Just saying we don't have any other choice.
I get you. But what I'm saying is, it's an interesting, and this, I want to tee this one up for Carl. It's an interesting the way the chips are falling, the quietness in terms of bringing people in and spending money on transfers, the solidification of the squad in terms of offering contracts to our big name players. Obviously, we'd all rather have seen Mo Salah over line as well, if that's what they're doing. But so many big name players tied down, that's quite heartening. And it's a wonderful squad of wonderful players for now. And I get the point Cam was making about succession. Edwards on the way out. Carl, I mean, you've got an awful lot of local contacts, and you know, as established earlier on in the chat, you talk to an awful lot of people who are obsessed with the club and write about the club and talk about the club for almost a living. Do you get the feeling, my pet theory at the moment, do you get the feeling that there's a sort of an atmosphere around the place where there may be a parting of the ways coming, that we're almost being set up to be at our most attractive for a potential suitor? Because that's very much what I feel at the moment.
Enjoying this podcast? Then why not supercharge your support for the Reds with Anfield Index Pro? With around 30 premium podcasts every month, AI Pro offers the very best reviews, reaction and debate on all things LFC. From the acclaimed statistics and deep dive analytics found in our Under Pressure podcast, to the transfer links, scouting reports and fast live reaction shows we record after every match, AI Pro is home to our very best content. With regular appearances by Reds legends like Jan Molby and Sir Kenny Dalglish, plus insight from journalists, sports scientists, coaches and psychologists, we'll help bring you closer to the club you love. There's never been a better time to take AI Pro for a test drive. Available on all popular podcast platforms, with free apps for iOS and Android. You can try it absolutely free with no strings attached. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com to start your 7-day free trial now.
This is an adage I've always had, and I've been saying it for 10 years. Liverpool's for sale. Liverpool is always for sale, always. It's the only thing that has stopped Liverpool being sold is the price. And, you know, and they're happy to sell parts of the club or anything like that. FSG, I mean, you can look at this dispassionately if you wish, but they've got no interest. They've got some interest in Liverpool because it's an asset, but they're looking at it because it's an asset. And yeah, they're enjoying all the trophies and what have you, but we're always for sale. That's never going to end. And that's how football is these days. They'll sell everything they can. What do you think, Mike Ashley is at Newcastle because he likes it? A little bit of him does, yeah, but he's waiting for the proper price, isn't he? Everything is for sale, always. Liverpool have been for sale since there was a McDonald's sign on the cop. Always. It's all for sale. Everything goes. That's what capitalism is. And I just to go back to a couple of things Cam said. Firstly, I completely agree with that. I mean, I don't think you're saying this, Cam, at all, but I completely agree with the protests of the Glazers, because I think what the Glazers have done is disgusting, and it nearly happened to us. So I've got no problem with that. So that's not an anti-Man United thing as far as I'm concerned. Yes, you can say, should they have lost 3 points? But they're never going to give in to Man United, are they? Of course they're not. I agree with that. I'm just going to put your heresy about Jordan Henderson aside for 1 second and pretend that didn't happen. But I think there's a reason why Jordan's been given a new contract, and that's because they want him to stay after the club as well. Not after his career. They want him round. And they're going to do the same to Milner as well, because they're too big. They're too, as assets on or off the pitch. And I do think it's mostly off at that point. they want him there, because I think he's got a big important role to think. But the transfer thing is weird, because the reason I haven't gone to town in it is because I said this to shall we say, one of the ring leaders of the FS Out group the other day, and we actually had a sensible chat about it. I said that the reason that people haven't slagged them off so much is because it's what you do, Trev. If I write a piece a day saying, you know, John Henry's a twat, you know, or anything like that, just weeks and weeks and weeks of it, and a half 10, Kylian Mbappe standing outside the ground with a scarf above his head.
Yeah.
You've got to wait. You've got to be patient. And I don't like FSG, and I will stand on the biggest pedestal in the world and say I don't like FSG, but Jurgen Klopp is also part of that process. What if Jurgen Klopp thinks, you know what? I'm happy with my lads. That's all I want. I'm happy with what I've got here. And we all want a bit of cover, you know. I mean, my thing I've been banging on for weeks about is the team's getting older, and you know, I'm sure there's a plan in place for that. And it's very, very difficult. I mean, that's why I'm really pleased to see the lads re-signing, because there's nothing worse than having seven fantastic. This happened under Kenny, if you remember. Having seven great players, and then suddenly they're all 32. And you're looking at 19-year-old Jamie Redknapp being captain of midfield, pretty much, which what did for Souness, amongst other things. Not all of it, but that's what did for him as well. There's got to be a sort of bit of continuity going on here. I think he's bringing Harvey in for Genie, even though it's not the same role. And I think he's going to shove a few more people around. He's got Curtis to come in as well, possibly to play as a six, or Henderson to play as a six if Fabinho's not around. I think Jurgen Klopp's looked at that and thought, you know what? I'm all right with my lads. And I think there's also going to be an element of, and by the way, I'm not defending FSG, because I loathe anyone owning my football club. And as I've written recently, including myself, I don't trust myself to run LFC. And I know exactly what LFC means to me. And I know what I'd like it to be. And I don't trust myself to deliver it. Never mind someone who's 4,000 miles away. So I don't like anyone owning my club, in case it's misused and it's something deeply personal to me. But I think Jurgen stood up and said, you know what? I'm all right with this. Or I want that lad over there. He's not coming. All right, then I'm fine. Because I know I've got Killian coming next year. I've got Erling coming next year. I've got Asensio, someone like that. You know, he's got someone in mind already. We had this when we had all the injuries before Virgil came. When Virgil didn't come the first time, when the club absolutely balls it up in the transfer, you know, and we got fined for it with Virgil. Jurgen didn't say, okay, I didn't get Virgil, I want the number two choice instead. He didn't do that. He waited around. He tapped his watch and went, January, by the way, don't forget how fast that was announced. January the 1st, we've got Virgil van Dijk, 75 million quid.
December the 28th,
yeah, sure. Yeah, it was just before he said, yeah, we've got him, and here's a photo of him. We've got him. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of that with Jurgen, because he's also done it with Alisson. And there was a big shock when Fabinho signed, but he clearly looked after him for a while. I think he's a lot like that. I think that's the way he does things. It is that, okay, well, I can't get him. Well, do you want this lad from? No, I don't want him either.
Well, they did it with Konate as well, didn't they?
Yeah,
we didn't know. Yeah. And Jota, he came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, then let's look forward for the last bit of the footy chat, and then we can take it wherever you want, because you know we're approaching the 55 minute mark. Let's just get your. I don't want in depth stuff here because other people have done this to death, but I want your feel for this. Looking at the squad as it is, and we're at currently, and I, by the way, touching the wood of the windowsill as I say this, we're currently not that afflicted by injuries. A couple of people carrying minor knocks, and we've got the Bobby situation, which is annoyingly vague, and I fear it might turn into one of those things that we'd get drip fed, and he's out for a while. I do worry about that, I have to say.
It was weird, actually. Cam, did you see this? That Fabinho went over to the side of the pitch for ages talking to Klopp at the Chelsea game. Before he came off, about 5 minutes beforehand. He was there for ages with the money.
I mean, it's, but who knows what was being said. I mean, the good thing was Bobby came off straight away. He knew straight away.
Well,
he didn't injure it any more than he could have.
Yeah, so barring that, and that's a big one, let's be honest. Because we have the four options up top and now we've three, and AFCON, as somebody mentioned earlier on, it starts to get funny looking up there. And we start to rely on lads who Jurgen doesn't seem to really have a whole lot of faith in, if we're being perfectly honest. I look at that squad and I wonder how many people Jurgen looks at and thinks, yeah, you're a first teamer, you'll do for me. He started the season with Naby Keita and I thought he was our best midfielder, and then all of a sudden Naby Keita didn't feature in the last game.
Madness.
I liked the bravery of going with Harvey Elliott, and I thought Harvey Elliott, I thought he acquitted himself wonderfully. I thought he looked very
Not
mature.
the best, I thought.
His touch and control, passing range, fantastic. I thought people were excessively harsh on him because I don't know what they expected from a kid. By the way, he didn't look like a kid. At times,
He didn't look out of place.
He looked like the most mature, confident person on the ball in our team at times.
Yes.
So the choice was Jordan versus Naby. Let's not get into that shit. But having a look at the squad, do you feel confident, Cam, that there's enough there to go and win a title if fortune is on our side with injuries? I think I do. I genuinely believe that
A
there's enough.
thousand percent yes.
Yeah.
1,000% yes. I mean, we're not, as a group of players, we're not worse than the group of players that won it 2 years ago. Since then, we've had a Konate, Jota, Thiago. I mean, you can write last season off because of, yes, we lost our defence and that had an impact, but we still had a better defence in the end than Man United did, and they finished second.
Yes,
So,
the crowd as well.
and yeah, I mean, a certain pundit on a radio show was slated for saying that Liverpool rely on the crowd, and people were having a go at it and said Man City don't rely on a crowd because of the way they play football and the fact that they play in an empty stadium. So of course we rely on the crowd. You know that we have a pub outside the ground called the 12th Man. You know the clue's there. The
Yeah.
crowd is hugely important to the way we
Massive.
play. They feed off us. They feed off us in games. Yeah. Barcelona, they fed off the fans. Man City, Champions League, they fed off the fans.
Did you feel that it was slipping away? You're both in the ground. Did you feel that atmosphere, that kind of, did you feel the tension creep in?
No, no tension. No
No,
tension whatsoever. No
no
tension
tension.
whatsoever. No tension whatsoever. It just turned into a dole fest of a
Yeah,
game.
but
There was.
it wasn't that frustration and anxiety that we're so used to for so many years. You just
Oh,
where
it
it
was just.
all,
No. I mean, what it was, you've got Tommy Tuchel, who's a brilliant tactician, and he set Chelsea up wonderfully in the second half. He took off their best DM at half time.
He's
What does
injured,
that
by the way.
tell you?
He's
He took
injured.
an he t But still, when you're with 10 men at Anfield, I didn't realize he was injured, sorry, but still to produce that performance in the second half, yeah. This is a team in 32 games under Tommy Tuchel. I think they've conceded 18 goals.
Yeah.
I mean, they know how to defend, yeah. And I just think we got the second half wrong.
So hang on then, hang on. I put this to Jan on yesterday night's show. It
Yep.
just came to me in the middle of the show, and I want both of your takes on this. Is there a version of Liverpool that could come alive in this squad, where we have a rock solid defence with all our class centre halves contributing, with our two full backs contributing defensively more as much as they do in attack, with Fabinho shielding, with Jordan doing his shuttle bits and getting back into a bit of form, or more to the point, Thiago maintaining possession and being a brilliant sort of link man, and then our forwards getting us the odd goal in three or getting us a penalty to win 1-0. Do we have it in this squad? Is this an evolution that's possible? And I'll start with you, Carl. To become grinders and win a league in the kind of Leicester style, or is there just too much flair in this group of footballers to ever play that way?
I think it's an interesting question because you need that to win the league. You can't win the league like Man City can every week. Man City are a freak football club where they can go out and batter everyone 5-0. Although, God, Arsenal helped them, didn't they? But winning 1-0 away from home Tuesday night in the rain is one of the hardest things you can do as a football club. And I think we can do that. I think we can play attritional football when we need to. And, you know, you can look at that. But it isn't the Chelsea game Tuesday night in a rainy club. You know, half time, we've got to get back and win these. And we got it wrong. And, you know, we got things wrong with that. The left-hand side of the pitch was a disgrace. Well, not disgrace, a mess, I'd say. And I'm not quite sure what he kept Fabinho on, to be honest. I don't really know what he did.
Yeah.
He just sit there and just go, well, if you get the ball, I might try and get it off you, but you're not going to get the ball for the next half hour at least.
Basically, what you had there, Carl, was you had a midfield where two of the units were kind of dysfunctional. Like, Jordan was all over the shop, and yeah. Fabinho was not, like, nobody wanted to hear it when I said it on post-match Raw. Nobody wanted to hear it, but it's true. He just was not himself. He wasn't at it in the way that we know he can. So, I mean, but allowing for adjustment, allowing for the fact that Jordan can get back into form, Fabinho will be the world-class talent he is. Isn't there? Would you not kind of love it to see that evolution, to see us turn it into not quite shithouses, but 1-0 merchants? I think I'd kind of love that, Carl.
Actually, Trev, I'll take that one for you. I think to a certain extent, we were already doing that the season we won the title. How many results that season did we win by the one goal? There was quite a lot. We've already got that within us. If you look back to when we started on our good run towards the end of last season and we won 8 out of the last 10 games, and the first 3 games of this season, guess who's got the best defence in the league?
Yeah, that's why I'm saying it, man. I think there's the makings of an evolution to this team where we're not in any way ever going to be accused of being that fucking really annoying, what was it? Rock and roll football, whatever, heavy metal football.
Heavy metal,
honestly,
yeah.
Screw that cliche, because to me,
that doesn't win you titles.
No, that's chaotic. It was beautiful. Yeah. It was a beautiful stage of the evolution, but it's chaotic. And honestly, fuck that. What I want now is cynicism. And I think, man, we might have it. That's where you're going with this, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've said this before. Goals win football matches. Strikers win football matches. Defenders and defence win you trophies and titles.
Yeah.
Because the foundation, the key is...
Is the zero.
Your defence, zero is, goals.
Yeah.
That's a point guaranteed then, straight away. Avoids relegation. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Then you start pinching the odd goal. Look at the players we've got who can score goals. We've got goal scorers in that team. Jota's becoming a Robbie Fowler. He did nothing, you know, for the first 2.5 games he's played. Yeah, but he scored 2 goals. He knows where the goal is. He's had minimal impact, very few touches, but he's becoming a Robbie Fowler. He's becoming a poacher. He's becoming a fox in the box. Yeah, he's a natural. His shot to goal, i.e. on target ratio, is extremely high. He more often than not either scores or makes the keeper work to save it. That's a wonderful quality. We know Mo Salah is going to be up there as one of the leading goal scorers come the end of the season. We're all hoping that Sadio comes back and picks up his form, because obviously he's got over all his, you know, little COVID issues that he possibly had before. We've got the most creative playmaker for me, aside from Kevin De Bruyne, in the league, in Trent. So we can play that way, the way that you're suggesting it. It is an evolution on our game, and I think to not be predictable, you have to evolve as a team, and this is part of that process. So we can't just keep doing the same things we've done every season, because teams figure it out. They'll know what to do. You know, before it was always, we'll never score against low blocks, or we don't know what to do. Well, we do, because we won a league against teams who just continually played low blocks against us. So we've got the players in that squad now, and it's all a question of, goes back to it, availability, fitness. And if those players are available, and the two I'm particularly thinking of here, who I think will be crucial for us this season in terms of creativity, is Naby and Thiago. Those two are going to be key. They are our creativity from the midfield. You know, I just want to see a midfield free of Fabinho, Thiago, and Naby. And I think that will wreak havoc. You could go almost in a 4-2-2-2 formation, and you could have you'd have an L shape of a Sadio, Bobby, Jota, and Mo with two up top. Say, possibly I'd have Jota and Mo up top, and then I'd have Naby and Sadio behind them. Then I'd have the two sixes in effect as Thiago and Fabinho, and then you've got your creativity and your width coming from where it has always come from, in Trent and Robbo. And you still got then your protection of your defence, because you'll have Joel or Joe or Konate with Virgil. You've got Alisson in goal. Then you still got Thiago and Fabinho protecting.
And the injection from the bench then of a Knox or a Hendo or a Harvey or a Curtis, then all of a sudden the squad starts to look as rich as it is. It's about playing those.
And don't forget, I still think Minamino will have a role to play this season. Now, don't discount him.
Honestly,
I do, because at the end of that, I think there's a player in there from the little I've seen of him. I'm not saying he's going to take the league by storm by any stretch of the imagination, but I would think, I mean, I can think the best example I can give of how good I think Minamino was. Our best performance last season was 7-0 away at Crystal Palace. How many teams go to Crystal Palace and beat them 7-0, regardless of whether there's fans there or not? City have never done that. And that game we had Naby and Minamino. Yeah. And they were awesome that day. And it's just like, they never Minamino never played another minute for us in the league after that. It was bizarre.
Let me bring Carl in, because we're gone long. And I want to get your, Carl, you dropped out. Cam came into the rescue there, white knighting for you. I want to give you your druthers and get you a chance to respond to that question about how much would you enjoy Liverpool evolving into a team that are basically just capable of one-nilers. And would you enjoy actually that evolution, or do you think there's too much quality in this team, too many flair players, for that to ever really be a thing that takes hold?
Well, we already are. We already are that team, because that's how we got into the Champions League. And, you know, people, I say this all the time, people can criticise, you know, Nat and Rhys, what happened last year. They've got us to the San Siro. And, you know, we already are. I mean, if you want to sort of mine the absolute depths of, you know, 1-0 attritional win, Trev, the goalkeeper scored the goal that won the game. The goalkeeper.
Correct.
I mean, talk about, correct, you know, yeah, you know, you want someone off someone's arse. If the goalkeeper scored the goal, we already are that team. We can do that. We could, and that's just spirit as much as anything else. I'll never forget that I read a book years ago about the Shankly team of the late 60s. And I think it was the 65, the cup winning season. It might have been 64 for the league, where they said 7 times in the league, Liverpool scored in the last minute. And every single time we scored, we were already winning the game. And that's what this side reminds me of. It's not like, you know, get to 1-1 and close the door. They're not like that. If it's 0-0, I mean, obviously, how much did we go for that? You know, it was a frustrating game on Saturday. But I should also say, because I was going to make this point before I was cut off, I think 1-0 down and N'Golo Kante playing the whole second half is a different game. I really do. Mm. That was my worry. And thank God we don't have to play them again, or him again, because I think he was the best player on the pitch by an absolute country mile.
Awesome player.
Yeah, he was just incredible, honestly. And just watch him in the ground. And, I mean,
he's two players in one.
He's just ridiculous, because, I mean, it's the work he does, and yet he's still bringing it 40 yards forward. And we couldn't kick him in the air. I think that a lot of Fabinho's problems was because of that. We already are that team. We don't take a draw anymore. Draws are defeats. So I think we are getting that way already. And, you know, that's how we, you know, when we won the league, when we won like 20 odd games, the mentality of the
25.
The mentality of the team at the time was, you know, a draw is a defeat. That's why we got, you know, 3 minutes down at Villa Park, 1-2-1. You know, goal down at Villa Park, 3 minutes to go, you'll take a point. These lads didn't. And that mentality is still there, I think. I mean, I've been lucky. I've been at all three league games this season. And we still went for it in the last minute, even though, you know, Burnley was done quite early on. Norwich was a cakewalk, but we still went down their end constantly, you know, penned them in. That this team is already like that. And it's going to be interesting because I made this point again in an article that what Chelsea did last weekend, I want to see if Man City can do that because that is a skill in itself. And that's why, you know, this league isn't quite as done and dusty because Man City, they're battering everyone, obviously, but I don't think they're going to batter everyone forever. They're going to batter a lot of teams, though, and that's the issue.
They didn't batter Tottenham.
Well, exactly, yeah. And it's not about, you know, obviously I'm disappointed that we're not on 9 points, but it's about the fact that you carry that mentality for all clubs. You're not going to win the league by beating Chelsea at home. It doesn't our bloody help, obviously. But it's a mentality thing more than anything else. And I want those lads absolutely streaming out the traps against Leeds.
Yeah, I had the feeling that I like the fact that this team is capable of leading from the front and staying there. So that's the only issue I had with not having 9 points. I want us to just be at the front because I think we have the mentality to cope with that. That was my frustration, but you know, all things considered, I'm quite buoyed up by this conversation. We've gone long. Alert the affiliates. We should start wrapping it up. So instead, as usual, of going around and getting everyone's things, including mine, I'm going to skip out like I did at the start. I'll get whatever you have to finish with. Carl, what's your final thought for today?
I'm a bit worried to say this because this might be a longer discussion. But let me just put this to you, because this is something that's come up in the last week or so, and it might develop into something bigger. I'm going to ask all three of you gentlemen to put the ball down on the paving stone at the corner of the Arkles of Utting Avenue and Anfield Road. I'm asking you to put it down, Trev. I'm asking you to put it down. Nice ball of your choice. You can kick it from your hands if you want, but you're standing on the corner of the Arkles.
Right.
Can you hit the ground?
I feel I can, yes.
I'm not entirely sure, and this might be developed. I said it's a throwaway joke.
No, it's a great one. I saw it, man, and it made me think. I've been thinking about it. I'm not answering that on the fly there. I've thought about this. Yeah, I feel like I can. I mean, you know, I play Gaelic football, so from the hand, absolutely I can with a drop.
No fences, no fences, no trees. That's the issue for me.
Yeah.
Hit the Kemlin or the Annie. I think he extra points for the Annie.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. Do you know what? I would absolutely love to settle this. If we just the next time we get the chance to rock up together, just bring three footballs. That would be
This might become a thing. We might be doing a charity thing about it, me and a few people. I'd love that. I spoke to Leanne about it, Leanne Prescott about it today. And she said, I might just turn up, just do it once, and then just walk off before the ground hits the ball, hits the ground, and leave you all to it. That sort of thing. The alternative one is the garage in front of the Sandon pub.
Okay.
Could you hit the ground? Could you hit the cop from there?
That seems more of a challenge from the mental picture I have in my head. Is that not definitely a longer distance?
I think the Arkles one's longer, but I don't know why.
I think the Arkles one is longer.
Is it?
It just looks that way on a map, yeah.
The garage where the Sandon is.
But at the very tip of it, then.
I think I could do. That's the Esso garage, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think I could do it from there. I'm not sure about the Arkle side, but I think I could do it from the garage to reach the ground. The perimeter of the ground, yeah?
Trev, I know you're thinking I'll hit the flagpole.
I'm not hitting the flagpole. I'm going to drop it right at Mo Salah's left foot on the edge of the box. That's what's happening. It's vision.
You're going to clear the cop, are you? Okay.
It's all about the vision, pal. Yeah, clear the cop with backspin, so Mo doesn't even have to break his stride. Yeah, that's how it's going to roll. I love this. That's an interesting grenade you fired in there at the end. Cam, your last thought for today.
I haven't got anything prepared, but just a couple of things I'll say. Happy 10th birthday to the Anfield Rap. Fantastic effort from all concerned there to keep going for that period of time. And just to LFC fans, enjoy what we've got. Yeah, it's frustrating. We're not overly happy with how things have turned out this summer, but just enjoy it, honestly, because we've got the best manager in the world and we've got some of the best players in the world. And we're so fortunate to be in that position, despite the fact that we all want more. Just enjoy it. Trust me, you'll be grateful for it afterwards.
We were all able to say today that we think we have a rattle at the league in us. And yeah. when you can say that, everything's fucking okay. That's the way I would say it. Everything's okay. Apart from the warm Carlsberg, which takes the sheen off everything. Yeah. Sorry, Mads. Sorry, my pal Mads. We should wrap it up at that. We'll leave it there for this week. We have gone long. Hopefully, we're giving you a bit of value for the horrible thing that is the international fortnight. We know you like to listen to a bit of Reds blather. So that's why we decided to keep rabbiting on for you today. We'll wrap it up there, though. I have been Trev Downey. That was Carl Kopak. Cam Branch was also in the house tonight, and in the background, quietly tonight, was Guy Drinkle producing. We'll speak to you next week.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.